Okay, you ready?
Ready? Okay. Okay, we're gonna reconvene on OPA-PA-11-018. And we are still in the appellant's case in chief. And the appellant has called Mr. Andy Leon Guerrero. Before we begin, Ms. Perez, have you had sufficient opportunity to speak with and confer with Mr. Leon Guerrero concerning his testimony to prepare your cross-examination of him?
We have.
Thank you. And Mr. Leon Guerrero, welcome once again to an OPA hearing.
Thank you.
I know you're a veteran. So
there is one.
From DPW at least, but not for DOE. So welcome back, and please come to the witness stand, and please have the witness signed in and sworn in. And may I ask who else is in the room? We don't have any people who are potentially witnesses here. Do we? No?
He's not. I don't know.
Okay, no, I'm just asking.
Okay.
I'm just verifying once again that the parties don't have any persons who are potential witnesses other than their institutional representatives present.
Raise your right hand and state your full name.
Andrew S. Leon Doyle.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
Ms. Campana, your witness.
Thank you. Mr. Leon, can you name for me your title, your position at GDOE?
I'm the superintendent of facilities and maintenance at the Guam Department of Education.
And which clarification, which division is that with?
Facilities and maintenance.
Okay, thank you. How long have you held this position?
As of today, approximately 5 months.
Did you hold this position in October of this year?
Yes, I did.
Okay. How long have you been on the job at that point?
From October?
Mm-hmm.
Approximately 5 months. I started at the end of September.
Okay. So you started at the end of September. By October, you were holding this position. And in your office with maintenance facilities, you work with Billy Cruz, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Is he over you? Is he your boss?
Yes, he is. He is the manager.
Okay, he's the manager. Were you at work yesterday?
Yes, I was.
Was Mr. Cruz at work yesterday?
I was at Chamuni Elementary School all day. We had an inspection, so I'm not aware if he was or he wasn't.
Okay. Today, when we called you to testify, you were prepared by Ms. Perez. Are you aware that you're under oath to tell the truth today?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I'm going to be asking you some questions about this procurement. Are you familiar with
him? Yes.
With IFB 0442011?
I am.
Okay. You assisted doing the evaluation of this procurement?
No, I didn't. I wasn't on board at the time when the evaluation of the procurement. When was that during the bid opening? I'm sorry, may I ask that
after
question?
After the bid opening, did you assist with the evaluation of the award?
No, not the evaluation.
You did not?
No.
If I can approach Exhibit 8 and this is our exhibit. It's a letter from your division. Are you familiar with this?
Yes,
sir. Okay. This was the document 27, and it's signed by you. Okay, thank you for that confirmation. Your team, do you work to evaluate bids after opening?
That bid was the only bid that came out during my tenure so far at GDOE.
And you work to cooperate with the procurement division as the facilities division?
Yes.
Okay. And is that because the facilities and maintenance division has the expertise to evaluate the various bids?
I don't think, in my opinion, that we have the expertise to do that. I think it's procurement, and GDOE even has that expertise.
So procurement has the expertise to evaluate the technical specifications?
Not the technical.
Okay, that's, so for the technical specifications?
For the technical specifications.
Okay, so you did have a role in helping to evaluate the technical specifications?
Very limited.
A limited role, but you did draft this letter?
Yes, I did.
Were you instructed to draft this letter?
I was asked to draft that letter.
Who asked you to draft the letter?
Procurement.
Procurement asked you to draft the letter. And this is the only time you've ever had to draft a letter of this type?
Yes.
Have you since drafted a letter of this type evaluating the technical specifications of the proposal?
Actually, there's one other one, but it was for a different procurement. It was for the outright purchase of air conditioners.
So one of these similar inner GDOD, GDOE memorandum evaluating from facilities and maintenance was drafted, has been drafted, based on your knowledge?
Yes.
It goes to procurement?
Yes.
And that serves function, right?
Yes.
That's so that procurement goes the technical side, but they probably don't have knowledge of. Okay, so you were asked by procurement to write this letter while...
Okay, I'm going to have to ask the witness to respond with a yes or no, and instead of a nod of the head.
Awesome.
Okay, because we can't pick up the nod of the head, but we will pick up the yes and no for the record. If you could please ask the last question.
I'm not sure which one.
Okay, well, please proceed.
I apologize for that.
For the record, the answer to the last question, the witness nodded his head. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Kamalka. So you were requested by the procurement division to prepare an evaluation of this bid?
Yes.
Thank you. And you wrote this letter evaluating the bid?
I did not write the letter.
Who prepared the letter?
The letter was prepared by procurement.
Procurement prepared this letter?
Yes.
And then you signed it and sent it to the supply management administrator?
That is correct.
Which division does the supply management administrator work for?
I'm assuming he works for procurement as well.
So procurement drafted a letter, sent it to maintenance, maintenance signed it, and then sent it back to procurement?
Correct. Yes.
When you signed this letter, your boss, Billy Cruz, was off island?
Yes.
Okay, and so you were acting on his authority?
Yes.
To sign this letter. So you were the representative of the maintenance and facilities division who signed this?
Yes.
Okay. And when you did that, you'd only been with DOE for less than a month?
Yes.
Okay. But I understand you're very experienced in the field, you have the background, and you are the most qualified person on the team to evaluate this letter and approve with the signature?
Yes.
Okay. So you had that authority, you did sign the document that you were requested to review by procurement?
Review that letter that I had signed? That letter?
Yes. Okay, so if I'm sorry, and I'm sorry if this is repetitive, but I just need to be clear. The letter was prepared in this format with a blank signature and sent to you to sign?
Yes.
And then you sent it to procurement?
Yes.
Okay. Did you agree with the contents of the letter?
Because I was not at the opening bid of this actual bid, what was requested through the letter was that certain information was needed, which is maybe normal in order to, I would think as part of procurement, so that's why I did sign it.
You signed it because the information requested in the letter, which was information from JRN that GDOE needed in order to make their bid compliant with the bid specifications, you understood that to be routine?
Yes.
Okay, that in order to get this information, GDOE would have to contact this bidder and ask them for the information?
Yes.
Okay, and so you signed that and approved of this letter to go to procurement, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Is it your understanding that this letter was released to the bidder or any of the bidders?
I don't know who it was released to.
Okay. That's all I have at this time.
Ms. Barron, your witness.
Thank you. Mr. Leandro, what
What was your understanding? Let me clarify. Did somebody from procurement tell you that they needed a letter regarding this bid?
Actually, that letter came to my desk, and I had read through it, and after I read through it, I saw what it had needed or what it had requested from a certain vendor, so I went ahead and signed it. It was just, I thought it was just information that was needed as part of the procurement process.
Okay. Did you feel that there was anything fishy or suspect about this letter? Did anybody ask you to do anything that you thought was fishy or suspect in the procurement of this IFB?
No.
Did you have any influence at all over determining who submitted the lowest bid?
No.
And other than the information in this letter, which Ms. Campana established with you, is asking about additional information, which may affect the responsiveness of a bid, did you have anything else to do with choosing who this bid would be awarded to?
No.
Okay. No further questions.
Have any recross? Sorry. Or redirect, rather.
Mr. Navarro, you did mention that you've been with GDB for a limited time, but since then, at least one other memorandum of this type has come out. Did that memo follow the same process of it arrived on your desk or on Billy Cruz's desk, completed, ready for a signature from procurement?
No.
No. Who drafted the other letter?
I did.
You drafted the other letter. So this was unusual, based on your limited experience so far, for them to give you a letter.
Well, not necessarily, because that would have just been the second letter.
Okay. I have nothing further.
Nothing further.
I do. Yeah. Who asked you to, you said earlier procurement asked you. Who in procurement asked you?
Mr. Frank Garcia. Frank Garcia.
And who is Mr. Frank Garcia?
I know he was out of procurement. I think he's the actual procurement. I think he's the procurement officer.
May I interject for clarification? We have an employee in procurement whose name is Albert Garcia.
I'm sorry. My mistake. I know everybody's name. I'm sorry. My mistake. Albert Garcia.
Albert Garcia presented this letter to you?
Not personally, but it came to our office.
Okay. So how did you know Mr. Garcia? It came to your office just routinely? How did it come to your office?
Well, somebody apparently had dropped it off.
Okay.
And then actually I got a phone call from Mr. Garcia explaining that why this letter was necessary. Well, not necessary. Why this letter was, necessary in order for me to sign it.
Okay. So he clarified the rationale.
Yes.
Okay. And before, did you thoroughly review the letter?
I read through the letter, yes. Okay.
Did you agree with its contents?
Yes, I did. Okay.
And therefore you had no hesitation in signing the letter?
No.
Okay. And did you ever inform Mr. Cruz about the letter?
No.
All right, thank you very much.
Are there any redirect based on those questions?
Nothing.
Any recross? Okay. Mr. Leon Guerrero, it's a pleasure to see you again in these proceedings. Of course, I have to give you the standard admonishment not to discuss your testimony with any of the other witnesses or any of the other parties until these proceedings have concluded. And further, I'm going to excuse you now. However, you are subject to recall by either party as long as these proceedings are in progress. Okay? Thank you very much.
Just to clarify, Mr. Leangaro may leave the premises?
Yes, he may leave. Just understanding that he might be subject to recall. He's received the same admonishment several times before.
Yes, I have.
Okay.
For the record.
We just like to make sure our employees know they can go back to work.
Yeah, you can go back to work. That's fine. Okay. Ms. Campana, any other witnesses?
No.
Does the appellant rest?
Yes.
All right. So the appellant rests. Ms. Parris, your case in chief.
Thank you. We call Mark Pito.
Mr. Pito, please proceed to the witness stand and please have the witness sign and sworn in.
Please raise your right hand and repeat your full name.
Marcus Pito.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Ms. Rapido, I see my concern.
Yes, you're with us, Ms. Parrish.
Could you please state your full name and what you, in your position with the DOE?
Marcus Pido, I am the Supply Management Administrator at the Department of Education.
Were you the Supply Management Administrator when GDOE IFB 044-2011 was issued?
Yes, I was.
Are you familiar with the administration of this IFB?
Yes, I am.
I'm just going to go ahead and start with, are you familiar with Appellant's Exhibit Number 8, which is a letter from the Facilities and Maintenance Division to the Supply Management Administrator?
Yes, I am.
Do you need to see it, or do you think you're familiar with it? Okay. Can you explain to me why a document like this might have been issued?
In an IFB, the determining factor is price. The bid is awarded to the lowest responsible bidder. In a public opening of the bids, the prices are read out loud. But that does not necessarily determine that the offerings of the bidders comply with the specifications in the bid. So once the public opening is conducted, then the end user, the division or school that has requested the procurement of these matters, whether it be products or services, is asked to verify that these are in fact the offerings satisfy the specs that they provided to procurement for issuance. So that's the process. So this letter is in the spirit of that process.
Okay, you see, let me ask you then. So it would it be unusual for procurement to consult with the end user, which in this case is facilities and maintenance, on an IFB regard?
Not unusual.
Okay. Do you think this letter is about technical specifications?
I'm reading it.
Okay. But would it have been a practice of the procurement division to possibly issue a letter similar to this with and in consultation with the end user about specifications?
The form of the letter is not to my liking, but yes, we would consult with the end user as far as the specifications.
Okay.
And the satisfaction of those specifications.
You said this letter isn't about technical specifications. It appears to be primarily about the number of workers in the bid. Is that your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. It has been raised as an issue in this matter that GDOE did in fact, or did ask for clarification from JRN with regard to the number of workers specified in their bid submission. Did GDOE ask for such clarification?
Yes, we did.
Why?
In their bid proposal, they had listed two workers to fulfill the work of the entire project for the entire year with a bid price of, I believe it was close to $1 million. So I don't know what kind of benefits that they're paying these employees, but it's a tremendous salary. And we thought that was an obvious mistake. So we asked for clarification.
Did you believe that that request for clarification was within applicable law or regulations?
Yes. It appeared that, as I had said, that two people to accomplish all that work for that amount of money for a calendar year, for the duration of the contract, was unusual.
Okay. After a protest or an appeal was filed, is it common for the procurement, for your procurement staff to conduct further review of a file that's the subject of a protest or an appeal?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. After this appeal was filed, did you, or did you cause your staff to conduct a further review of the file for IFP 044?
Yes, we did.
And when you conducted that review, what did you find?
We determined that, actually, each bidder had some issues with their bids, whether it be a price offering that was beyond the government estimate, or the requirement of submission of references.
Did you find anybody to have a problem with compliance with the DOL wage determination as well?
Yes, we did.
Is it fair to say that you discovered things, quite frankly, after the appeal was filed in your review, that were not found the first time the bids were evaluated?
Yeah, you know, based on my limited experience, or my limited tenure with DOE, I've come to know the expectation of these hearings, and so we, when the appeal was filed, we did a thorough, another thorough review of the file.
And given the developments that you identified in your review after the appeal was found, what was your recommendation as to what to do with this IFP?
That the, discovered irregularities or noncompliance of the bids led us to believe that it would be in the best interest of the department to cancel and go back out.
Did you, when you say cancel and go back out, do you mean cancel and reissue?
Yes.
Are the services required or sought in this IFP necessary for the department?
Quite necessary.
Did you think that cancellation and or reissuance, rather, of this would be the fairest approach?
Yes, I believe so. Each bidder submitted bids that were non-compliant or beyond the government estimate. I thought that the best way to achieve the procurement would be to go back out.
Okay. After the appeal was filed, were you able to make a decision to reissue?
No, the matter was stayed.
If, however, you could proceed in a fashion, if you could make that decision as the procurement administrator, would that be your recommendation to reissue?
Yes.
One of the mistakes I believe that you or your department had identified was references. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And those were mistakes been identified in the bids that had been submitted, correct?
That's correct.
Are references important to determining whether or not services would be adequately performed in an IFP of this scope and size?
Absolutely. These are taxpayer dollars that we're expending for these projects, and these are large projects. We don't want to award projects of this magnitude, or even for a dollar of taxpayers' funds, to go to contractors that have neither the experience nor the ability to perform.
It has been established already in this proceeding that in J&B's technical proposal, they identified several companies or entities for which they were a service provider. Do you think that the term service provider is a sufficient reference to previous work of a scope and, of a specific scope and size?
No. A service provider could mean many things. If the project or the contract is not described and the size of that contract is not indicated, then we have no idea of the magnitude nor the scope of work of said service.
Did you make a finding, well, was there a finding then that J&B had failed a finding by you that J&amp;B had failed to provide adequate references in their bid response?
That's correct. We identified the trade references, but we didn't see any references to contracts or projects of similar size and scope.
Okay. Did you find a problem with references in JRN's bid?
I don't recall.
Okay. I'm going to... produce to you our GOE's exhibit. This is on Exhibit A, page mark Exhibit A-1. Let's take a look at that. Are you familiar with that document?
Yes, I am.
Is that your signature at the bottom of the page?
Yes, it is.
Did you author or co-author this document?
Yes, I did.
Okay. From that document, can you tell me whether or not you identified deficiency with JRN's bid related to references?
Yes, they submitted one reference.
Did that satisfy the requirement in the IFB?
No, it did not. The IFB required two references.
What's the number again? I apologize.
Oh, page mark Exhibit A-1.
Okay.
Tab 18.
Seems to me, Mr. Pito, that if you were going to recommend...
Tab 15. Please proceed.
Seems to me, Mr. Pito, that if you're going to recommend, and if you could get your way, that you would reissue this procurement, that that would involve extra time to get these services. Is that right?
That's correct.
Department needs these services?
Yes.
But you would still recommend the reissuance despite the extra time?
I believe that's the proper thing to do in the best interest of the department and of the territory.
Okay. I have no further questions at this time.
Ms. Campana, your witness.
You mentioned, this ties into our last sentence too, but you mentioned your limited tenure at CZB. How long have you been with CZB?
I began January 3rd of 2011.
And we were discussing our Exhibit 8, which was the internal memo. You were discussing that as an important document, very relevant. We had just heard testimony from Mr. Leon Guerrero did in his 5-month tenure at GZOE, but he's seen two of these memos. Can you tell me approximately how many of these internal memos you've seen in your time period?
Perhaps three, four? Not exactly sure.
Okay. So we were discussing the bid status notification issued on October 21st. No, I'm sorry. We're discussing the letter issued on October 27th, which shows that JRN had issues with their bid that GZOE would like to contact them to clarify. And you specified that that would be a not a technical specification, correct?
The letter of October.
It's upon submitted 8. This was dated October 27th, okay. And you just testified that this letter contains not technical specification issues with JRN's bid?
The gist of that letter is generally non-technical.
And the manpower requirements, that's not a technical part of the bid?
That's correct.
Okay. The two workers that JRN listed, and you said that this created a red flag you saw as an obvious mistake because of the amount of the bid, it's almost $1 million. Would you see that as a major mistake in the bid or a small minor informality of the bid?
I think it's an obvious mistake.
It's an obvious mistake. Okay. And this obvious mistake, it affects section 2.55 of the bid, which requires the manpower.
It
There was a requirement of mashup. The bid submitted was two, I forget how it's worded, two men. And there was a bid price. And we determined that it was an obvious mistake. So we asked them to clarify after the auction.
And there's another issue, though. If JRN's bid only lists two employees, you or the agency cannot make an evaluation of their compliance with the Department of Labor wage specifications either, could they?
I'm not sure.
These two issues tie together. If you improperly list your manpower and you don't list out each employee, then the agency evaluating the bid cannot make its determination in compliance with the Department of Labor standards.
I would have to take a look at the evaluation.
This is, it's actually in the letter dated October 27th, but that's why this is a problem. That's okay, I can move on from that. You know, no matter what premise GDUE was going to award the bid to JRN on, we're looking at a letter dated October 27th. On October 21st, GDUE issued an intent to award to JRN, correct?
No. No, it was time.
Okay, this is a cover to bid at 7. This is the bid status notification that was issued to J&B. And this predates that internal memo, and the grounds for the denial of J&B's bid at this point are high price grounds, correct? And this is signed by you, and that is your signature, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So at that point, GDUE was sticking strong to their position that J&B was compliant. J&B had conformed to the requirements. The only problem was they were second place, correct?
At that time.
And so your testimony seemed to say that until GDUE had more opportunity to review everything again because an appeal had been filed, you didn't realize, you didn't read the bid closely enough to see that there could be some other issues. Is that your position?
We reevaluated once there was a protest, and then further evaluated after the appeal.
Okay. And one of the things you noticed upon your reevaluation is that allegedly J&B is not in compliance with Section 2.55, which requires two references, correct?
Sure.
Now, would you say, and you did though, can you confirm that your testimony describes the importance of these references because how else will the agency evaluate if this bidder is responsible, has the experience enough to complete this project?
Correct.
Okay. So would you say, and you did start off your testimony by saying that GDUE has to award to the lowest responsive responsible bidder. Would you say this is an issue of responsiveness or responsibility?
What is?
The Section 2.55, the references.
They're responsible.
The responsibility. Yeah. Okay. And you also testified that GDUE made a mistake in not closely evaluating JRN's bid, where JRN only listed one reference, correct?
I'm sorry, repeat your question.
When I can rephrase. JRN only listed one reference, correct?
Yes.
And that reference was GDUE, correct?
JRN?
Yes.
I don't recall.
But later, when the Department of Education issued their agency report, they had a December 28th reevaluation of these bids, and they made a determination that JRN only listed one reference. I can refer you again.
Yes.
This week. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Is there any redirect?
Yes, very briefly. Mr. Fito, would you say that DOE got everything right the first time around?
No.
Reviewing this IFP? Do you think you identified more things after the appeal was filed because you were reviewing you and your staff were reviewing the file a little more closely?
Yes, that's correct.
You had said earlier that you couldn't take any action because the stay was in place. Assuming that stay wasn't there, would you have taken actions to correct the deficiencies that you had identified, or to address the deficiencies you had identified?
Yeah, absolutely. And we would have canceled and reissued.
Given that the first go-around, DOE had identified JRM as a responsive bidder, and in the second review after the appeal, you identified JRM's bid as being deficient and other deficiencies in the other bids. What do you think is the best course for DOE? I mean, can you turn a blind eye to what you've discovered in your second review?
Absolutely not. We can't knowingly accept deficiencies. If a bid says we're going to pay a worker X amount of dollars and it's not the correct amount that they should be paying that category, we can't knowingly allow that to go forward.
Well, could you knowingly allow lack of references now that that deficiency has been identified? Could you allow it to go forward?
No, it's really required to be two.
And can you produce enough money to pay the highest bidder in this case?
If we could or not, we won't do that.
Okay. All right. So I have no further questions.
Is there any?
Can I ask just one more question?
Yes.
If J&B hadn't protested, you never would have realized that JRN was a non-responsive bidder, correct?
Possibly.
You never would have reevaluated.
We don't know.
You would have awarded to a non-responsive bidder.
Possibly.
Do you think it's fair?
Well, could we have possibly have done? I'm not sure if it would have been fair or not. We're not down that road.
Thank you.
Mr. Pito, going back to the October 27th letter that we established earlier, according to Mr. Leon Guerrero's testimony, it was prepared by Alfred Garcia. And if I misquote you, please correct me, but you use words to the effect, my recollection during your testimony was that the memo was not to your liking. Do you recall something along that line?
Yeah. It's...
Why was...
It's
is
not,
that...
Yeah. It's not... it's not proper that we craft documents for someone's signature that they didn't craft themselves.
I see.
That there should have been, perhaps, a memo done and a concurrence line on the bottom, perhaps, but the true author should have been listed as the author of that document.
I see. How did you find out that Mr. Leon Guerrero, or assigning this, did not, how did you find out that he did not prepare the letter? Was it through the testimony just now, or?
Pretty much. This is a surprise.
This is a further surprise.
An unwelcome surprise. Yes.
So, did you see this memo though prior to this time? You never.
I saw it yesterday.
For the first time, also.
Yes.
Really. But it's. Are you the supply management administrator?
I am.
And it was stamped, right? But you did not get it.
I do not.
Does that call into question something about your system?
It does. And granted, this is it's not an excuse.
Sure.
Back in September, October, we were trying to push dollars out the door, trying to meet certain error deadlines. And
although this is not
local, I agree, this is locally funded, right. But it was caught up in that rush. And so the
that letter get crafted without my knowledge? I'll admit, yes. Am I familiar with this bid? Yes, but perhaps not as much as I should have been. But, yeah, we have implemented new processes where that doesn't happen anymore.
Okay, so because that relates to, and thank you for that clarification. So you just to recap concerning this October 27th letter, you just learned from Mr. Leon Guerrero's testimony that it was prepared by Albert Garcia. The style you would prefer, though, would have been prepared by Albert, but concurred by would be. But also further adding to this, you did not see this letter until yesterday.
That's correct.
Okay. Therefore, going back to my letter of to your letter to file of December 28th. Okay. The question I was going to ask you was, how come under JRN you only listed one item? This is your December 28th letter to file where you say all three bidders have a problem. Okay. But in JRN's case, there is no reference to this issue of a proper calculation of manpower wage cannot be met at this time. That was the subject of the October 27th letter prepared by Albert Garcia, right? There is no mention to wage determination as one of the issues for JRN's non-responsiveness.
JRN wasn't, it was a matter of manpower. JRN, they had listed two individuals for their contract of close to $1 million.
Only two?
Correct. So, we clarified the level of manpower for the bid.
How did you clarify that?
After the bid opening, we clarified what is the manpower for your bid. They had to list only two individuals, where the requirement was for, I believe it's 40.
Yes.
So, we thought that was an obvious mistake. And so they did clarify it. They didn't change their bid price. They clarified their manpower.
Oh, okay. You sought clarification from them. They responded.
That's correct.
They responded in writing? Or?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So that's why in your memo, so the concern raised by Albert Garcia was resolved?
Yes.
Okay. So therefore, that's why in your memo to file, you're disqualifying JRN primarily because of the one reference.
That's correct.
Because the wage determination, in your opinion, was resolved satisfactorily.
Upon clarification.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Ms. Perez, any redirect?
None. Those
questions? Ms. Caban, any reprofs concerning those questions? Okay. Well, Mr. Pito, I'm going to give you the same order not to discuss your testimony with any of the parties or the other witnesses till the conclusion of these proceedings. And, of course, you are excused as a witness, subject to recall until these proceedings conclude. But you can have your...
I have a question.
Yes.
What's the definition of conclusion of these proceedings?
When we have essentially... ended the formal hearing. We're no longer, both sides have rested and we're not taking any further testimony.
That's not when the decision is made.
No. This hearing will, at some point, just to clarify and to answer your question, when I asked Ms. Campan if the appellant had rested, that just simply means they have no more evidence to put on at this time. Likewise, at some point, when Ms. Perez ends her case in chief, she will likewise rest. And then after closing arguments, the hearing itself is concluded. Okay? All right.
And in other words, he can then talk to his staff.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're does not have to wait for our decision.
No. Okay. Please have a seat. Ms. Perez, you want to take a break?
We rest.
Oh, you rest?
We rest.
Okay.
That's about closing rates.
Well, I think we should give them a little short break. Schedule wise, you better if we just do okay. Are you prepared for closing arguments today?
Now we are. GDOE is prepared.
Mr. Pence? Okay.
Oh, okay.
So let's, but I'll give you a 10-minute break, okay? And we'll go off the record at 2:50, and we'll reconvene at 3 o'clock, and we will start with closing arguments. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Camacho.
Okay, we're back on the record on OKHP-11-018. It is approximately 3:06 p.m. And both parties have rested.
Proceeding to the closing arguments. The closing arguments will proceed as follows. Ms. Campana, you will begin with your closing statement. Followed by DOE with their closing statement, and you will have the opportunity for a brief rebuttal, Ms. Campana, at the end of their closing statement. So, that said, are there any preliminary issues before we begin?
Not for DOE.
Okay, so, Ms. Campana, the floor is yours for your closing statement.
J&B Waters had filed a protest in this matter because GDOE repeatedly indicated they were intending to award this bid to a clearly non-responsive bidder, JRN. It took quite a bit of effort on J&B's part to get GDOE to admit JRN was a non-responsive bidder. The evidence has shown that GDOE has taken extreme steps to fix the bid of JRN to make sure it complies with what the bid required. They claim they did this under the law. They claim that the bar allows them to contact a bidder after bid opening and fix a major mistake in the bid. Now, Mr. Pito testified that this was a major mistake in JRN's bid, that they only listed two workers for a job worth almost $1 million. It was a clear mistake, and it tied into other parts of the bid, not just the section that requires a 40-man hour. It ties into the part that requires a Department of Labor wage determination compliance as well. After we got to the point of DOE issuing their agency report on this matter, we finally had a reevaluation of all of the bids. However, at that point, instead of admitting that J&B was the only responsible bidder who was under the bid price, GDOE then came up with a new argument. They said that J&B was non-responsive to sections 2.55 and sections 3.11 of the bid. Now, this was raised, as I said, and as the evidence established, for the first time in the December 28, 2011 agency report. And Mr. Pito did testify that the agency reevaluated, they went back, they looked at all of the documents, and these issues came jumping out at them. But we would question the partiality, the objectiveness, the fairness of an agency that didn't originally evaluate these bids in such great detail to make these determinations, especially as to JRN, who was clearly on the face of their bid, not compliant. We can talk about the specifics. We heard a lot of testimony about section 2.55, the references section. Mr. Pito testified that this ties into the responsibility of the bidders. I think that we've clearly established that J&B is a responsible bidder. Their list of references was over 10 references for this project. And I think it's really interesting that JRN only listed one reference. They only listed GDOE.
When the bid requires you to list a reference for projects, the bid doesn't say that you have to list out the IFP number or the price of these projects that you previously have done. So maybe for the next bid, they could require that, which was that amount of specificity. For this one, they did not. And I know that there were a lot of questions and that Attorney Perez was asking Mr. Van Dyen, why would you submit after the fact in your, as your exhibit 14, this list that includes prices that shows that you did do these contracts? That's not relevant. That has nothing to do with what the bid asked them to do. The bid asked them to provide references, and they did. Moving on to the 3.11, this is a requirement that the bidders submit confirmation that they're complying with the United States Department of Labor wage specifications. Now, if the public auditor does have jurisdiction to consider this issue, which we have argued in our pleadings that the public auditor does not, this is for the Department of Labor to consider, then we have to go to whether or not J&B was in compliance with this specification. J&B listed the $9.92 per hour wage. We had Mr. Salazar testify, and he did state, you know, that could have been a mistake. Mr. Van Dyen testified that could have been a mistake for them to tie that number to that category of worker. But that wasn't a part of the requirement of the bid. The bid didn't say that you have to put in category 23370. It just said that you have to certify that you're in compliance, and J&B was in compliance. So it just appears to me that DBE is going out of their way to ensure that this bid was awarded to JRN by taking these extensive steps to fix their bid. And now that they've discovered something that would absolutely be a minor informality, you want to talk about a mislabeling of a document, the wrong category number, I believe, would be a mislabeling of a document. But for whatever reason, because GBE does not want to award this bid to J&B, they would never take the same steps to contact J&B and say, it appears that you have listed the wrong wage determination. Meanwhile, we have major issues, as Mr. Pito referred to them, a major mistake, listing of only two workers, something that ties into another part of the bid when they can't make a determination of compliance with Department of Labor specifications. So you're clearly violating two parts of the bid. You're non-responsive to these parts of the bid, and yet GDOE refuses to acknowledge that. So it just seems clear to me that GDOE was going out of their way to accommodate JRN to fix their bid, and then when they were called out on it, first they refused to turn over documents. Finally, they show us the documents, and then they changed their mind. They changed their mind on the ground, and I agree, I think it's a good thing that they were able to review these documents again and come up with a new determination. But I'm not sure it's ultimately helpful, though, if we can't award to the, as the long code requires, award to the lowest, most responsible bidder. That would be J&B. You know, we had a lot of talk about Exhibit 8. I think almost every witness referenced that exhibit or has discussed it at some point. I think that exhibit in itself isn't so important. Now that EDOE has acknowledged JRN was not responsive, they've admitted to it. They know it now. But it is important because it really shows the way that this agency is approaching procurement. I think we have a letter, an interagency memorandum from one person who didn't actually write it to another person who didn't actually sign it. And no one knows what the other person's doing. No one's sure what the purpose of it was. And it shows that the bidder they were awarding to was non-responsive. This is incredibly prejudicial to the other bidders, and it hurts long. This is why this bid has not been awarded yet. This is not the first time they've issued this solicitation for bids, this IFB, and they're going to have to do it again. So you're going to talk about a waste of time and waste of money. We do have a responsive bidder. We do have a responsible bidder, and they're under the bid price. So that's why we believe that this bid should be awarded to J&B Honor Tech.
Thank you, Ms. Capano. Ms. Parrish.
Thank you. I think that we begin by pointing out the request for compliance information from JRN. I'm almost flattered on behalf of my department that Mr. McConaughey thinks it was some orchestrated maneuver to do it, but that's not what it was. We thought that there was information that was an obvious mistake and per the regulations could get clarification, and when clarification was received for Mr. Pito's testimony, that the issue of how many workers was in Jaren's bid was resolved. And then to move on from there, and if we were to believe Ms. Campana's allegations about how the department handled it, it would seem like we were operating some big conniving machine. Everything's against J&B or we were in favor of JRN. But if anything, our pleadings and the testimony show today that what we're trying to do here is actually correct what has occurred in this, and that's why we've asked for reissuance. You know, J&B, through their counsel, asked for the entire file and they got it. And the consequences of that and of filing the appeal is that DOE would go back, of course, in preparation of this case and review the record before it. And on reviewing the record before it, DOE put out there, mistakes were made. We have since identified deficiencies in at least two of the three bids submitted. The other one was too expensive, and we believe that the most practical, most efficient, most fair way to proceed in this case is to reissue. That's not an easy thing for an agency, for anybody to do, is to admit that, but we have. And that's because, as Mr. Pito testified, GDOE believes this is the fairest way to achieve what we're looking for in this procurement, which is services at the lowest price by a responsive and responsible bidder. J&B took the risk of filing the appeal that all this information would come out, and it did. J&B's counsel, Ms. Campana, has indicated, well, but nobody tried to contact J&B to get clarification of their wage or of their references or lack thereof, but we couldn't. There's a stay. We're in appeal. So there was no opportunity, as Mr. Pito testified, to go out and get clarification. Had these mistakes been discovered prior to the appeal, that's probably where this would have gone, but it couldn't happen once the appeal was in play. There was a stay in effect. What the appeal did was offer GDOE an opportunity to identify deficiencies, quite frankly, in those bid submissions. And J&B is not of clean hands, as they would ask you to believe. J&B made mistakes, just like JRN did with regard to references. And specifically for references, it's kind of interesting to note that Ms. Campana says Exhibit 14, which is the references that contain, oddly, exactly two references for contracts of very similar size and scope, is not relevant. It's not relevant, wasn't in the bid document, but it was here. They introduced it. And what it showed you is that Mr. Rangayan and Mr. Salazar said, well, Mr. Rangayan specifically said, oh yeah, we have this document on file. We could have easily shown that there was compliance with the reference requirement, but they didn't submit it. He also admitted that the Department of Labor payment for position 23370 was likely a mistake. So these are mistakes. These are things that GDOE identified. We need these services. Mr. Pio has indicated we need these services. These are important to the department. Reissuing it is going to take more time, but quite frankly, he's testified, he's a procurement administrator. This is, in his opinion, the proper way to proceed. We're not trying to pull the wool over anybody's eyes. GDOE has been absolutely forthright in identifying these deficiencies and asking for the relief that we believe is fair to everyone. J&B's insistence that they are the only qualified bidder, quite frankly, is incorrect and hypocritical. They state that JRN had a mistake in their bid. Well, J&B had a mistake in theirs too. And to allege that they should be awarded this bid and that JRN shouldn't because of a mistake is, like I said, it's unfortunate and it's hypocritical. And given what we've identified in this procurement, given that GDOE has come forth and acknowledged that it wasn't perfect in its first evaluation, but because it did a review of these, of its file, we're asking that the public auditor allow GDOE to do what we believe is fair, and that is to reissue this procurement so that when it comes in, we can conduct the more thorough, the fair review And that's what we're seeking here today. That's all. Thank you.
Before we proceed, I do have one question. Ms. Behrens, I know you're referring to the GAR, the Guam Procurement Regulations, but is DOE following its own procurement regulations or the GAR?
Where there is a conflict, we would generally, we believe that the GAR, particularly when it's later in time, would supersede the DOPRs, which is what we refer to as the DOE procurement regulations. But for the most part, the DOPRs echo, are identical to the GAR.
Okay.
So yes, we follow. And we follow both because they say the same thing for the most part. Where they don't say the same thing, we would apply generally the GAR. And where there's a statute that speaks to it, we would follow the statute.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I was just in your closing, you kept mentioning the GAR. So
oh, yes. Just
find which one you're actually following, or if there's been some kind of rescission of those.
And I will say that there's not a written policy to address the conflicts. And so there would be advice between counsel and client where those conflicts might arise. But we do acknowledge the existence of the DOE procurement regulations. We acknowledge the existence of the general administrative regulations for procurement, many of which were actually enacted after the DOE regulations. And that they're all, those are all subject to, of course, what's in statute.
Okay, but DOE is still following its own DOE procurement regulations, correct?
Yes, to the extent that they are similar, identical to the GARs.
Okay, thank you. Just clarifying that point in your argument. Ms. Capanna on rebuttal?
In rebuttal, I'll say that Ms. Perez ended the discussion with fairness and has repeatedly throughout these proceedings brought up that because JMB filed this protest, she seems to blame JMB for the fact that this award, this bid has not been awarded. Like, it's our fault that we raised this issue to the public auditor of these deficiencies. And, you know, we're not asking for special treatment at this point, and we're not asking for a request for clarification if there were mistakes in the JMB bid. They're not necessary. JMB fulfilled the requirements of Section 2.55 and Section 3.11. The only evidence the GDOE has been able to present is that perhaps JMB had even more references. They have so many references because they've been doing work with GDOE and with other agencies on air conditioner maintenance and repairs since the 90s, since the early 90s is my understanding. And so they didn't present all of them. Well, GDOE didn't ask for all of those references. They only had to provide two. And I think it is suspect, and I think there is something fishy, and I think we have every right to point out that it does seem prejudiced against the other bidders towards JRN when JRN is the only one who they seek out for this special treatment. It does seem to imply that they are making every effort to award to JRN. Why are they going to JRN, who only submitted one reference? And a reference is an agency. A reference is not a contract. The reference is the agency you contact. They only submitted one, and it was for GDOE, yet GDOE found that perfectly responsive. So I think that really shows that their entire defense is premised on, well, we don't know because so many mistakes were made. The inmates are running the asylum. No one knows. No one can be held accountable for anything because no one can get anything right. So how can you question someone? He didn't sign that. Why would he sign something that has his name on it? It's almost implied like we're fighting air here. It really makes it a challenge. So I think it is unfair that no one will take responsibility, and we're not asking for a post-bid opening reevaluation or request for clarification because we really don't think it's necessary at all. And in the end, if GDOE is allowed to reissue this bid, we will end up in the same boat. If they are not held accountable for the mistakes in their evaluation process, we're going to end up with more protests, more appeals. We're going to be back in the same room.
Okay. We're going to take this matter under advisement at this time, and pursuant to the February 15, 2012 scheduling order, just reminding the parties of the March 6, 2012 deadline to file your brief on remedies. That's a brief that you may file. You don't have to file. That's up to you, okay? And that's just the respective parties' position on what the remedies in this matter should be. So just a reminder of that deadline. Are there any other matters we need to take up at this time?
Not from GD Lee.
Okay, then this hearing is concluded, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we're adjourning, and we're off the record at 3:20 p.m.